This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Hello, everybody. The Hockey News Podcast is back, and A Squad is back, assuming you still consider myself, Matt Larkin, Ryan Kennedy, and Ken Campbell the A Squad. If that's how you view it, then the A Squad is back. No Edward Fraser. We'll miss you, Ed. You'll be back at some point, I'm sure. But the original crew is here, and Kenny, how was your 78 weeks of vacation?
78 weeks. It was only five, Matt.
It
was wonderful. My wife and I went to England and Scotland, and we had a lovely time. Lots of rain. It only rained. We were in Scotland for 2.5 weeks, and it only rained twice, once for 10 days and once for 4 days.
I see what
it took a second. I was like, what? Oh, yeah, okay. The gears were turning. All right, Kenny. Well, it's good to have you back.
I actually went to the arena, the Murrayfield Arena, where Tony Hand played his hockey. I don't even know if you guys know who Tony Hand is. One of the greatest Great Britain players ever. You know, scored a bunch of points, was drafted by the Edmonton Oilers, came over for a couple camps, never played. But anyways, yeah. So I was, because a friend of mine's son plays for the under-16 team. True story, bro.
True story. Isn't awesome. Steve Thomas considered a British export as well? He was born there.
He was born there. Yeah.
But I don't know if he would be
He's played for Canada internationally. So it's like
Owen Nolan and Ireland.
Right.
Doesn't really count. But okay, well, Kenny, welcome back. And we're going to jump into one more summer version of the All Mailbag Edition. Lots of good questions this week. Lots of humdingers. Stumpers, if you will. I'm feeling goofy today. I don't know why. So the first one is from Lefty Janimus, who sounds like some, like, I don't know, like a newspaper reporter.
Or
like a power hitter from like 1952. Up at the dish now, Lefty Janimus. He's got
Rocky Colavito.
Yeah, exactly. And Lefty asks, you guys have discussed which coach is on the hot seat, but what about which GM is on the hot seat? Mm-hmm. And that's fair. I feel like coaches get a lot more play, but GMs, they get axed as well. So who do you guys have?
Coaches get a lot more play because it's the GMs who are firing them.
Yeah. True. GMs tend to have longer leashes for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So who do you guys have as your hot seat GM? We'll start with you, Kenny. Get back in the game.
Well, I've got Dale Tallon of the Florida Panthers. He's got his coach. He's got his goalie. They've been underachievers for quite a good number of years, and part of the reason is because for whatever reason, the Florida Panthers never know when the season's beginning, and they play terribly for the first 2 months, and they're out of it by Christmas, and as well as they play the rest of the year, they can never claw their way back in. If the Florida Panthers have another terrible start, and Sergei Bobrovsky plays like Sergei Bobrovsky played the first couple of months of last year, I think then you've got to look at the guy in charge and say, hey, this we've given you everything you want. You can spend to the cap. You got your coach. You got your goalie. You got all the players that you've said you wanted. So, I mean, at some point, it's got to come down to the guy putting the roster together.
And it's funny you mention it, too, because I know I've been very bullish on Florida, having these hunches that they're going to be special this year. But I looked at their schedule, and they play 13 games in October, 9 are on the road. They open the season with a back-to-back against Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
And Sergei Bobrovsky's worst month of his career splits, is by far October. Yeah. So I'm like, oh my God, the deck is stacked again against them. They're going to be bad in October again.
I'm not picking them to make the playoffs because I'm tired of that. I'm tired of getting burned by them. Mm-hmm. It was the same thing with the Washington Capitals. I stopped picking them to win the Stanley Cup and then just go out and prove me wrong.
So, and then they did.
Yeah, they did. And they did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with John Chayka in Arizona. You know, you have a new majority owner coming in. You have a team that hasn't made the playoffs for quite a while now. And, you know, he did make some bold moves in the summer, bringing in Phil Kessel. But what if it doesn't work out? You know, I think it will. I think Phil Kessel is going to be pretty good.
I think he's going to be terrific.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a good spot for him. You know, you have a coach in Rick Tocchet who is really taken that room and made it his own. And, you know, you could have a potential impact rookie in Barrett Hayton if they need him. And I think they might. I think they probably have a spot for him. You know, a great young 200-foot center. But if it doesn't go well, at what point do you have to pull the plug on the John Chayka experiment? And, you know, I don't think this is a case of him being on a sizzling hot seat. It's more like one of those buffet trays. Yeah,
hot plate.
You know?
Yeah,
where you're keeping things
like
warm.
It's like in your car in the wintertime when you have heated seats.
Yeah, exactly. Kind of
like he's feeling a little bit of sweat underneath.
Yeah. 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 Exactly. So, yeah. But if Arizona doesn't make the playoffs again, I think you really have to take a long look and say, well, how long do we have to give you?
Right. Because it's been since 2011-12, I believe, is the last time we saw the Coyotes in the playoffs, right? Mm. So that's a good pick. I'm going to go with Kevin Cheveldayoff in Winnipeg. And to me, he's a guy who's been pretty untouchable for this recent era of contention. He's done such a good job building the team from within, not being particularly aggressive, chasing big-name free agents. It's been all homegrown guys. But the problem is, I think there's a worry now that maybe Winnipeg missed a crucial window, especially last year. We had them winning the Cup. And now you've lost Jacob Trouba. You've lost Tyler Myers from that right side of the defense corps. And you have questions now about, you know, is Patrick Laine going to sign? Are they going to lose Patrick Laine? And if you have to trade Patrick Laine or he gets offer sheeted, or is it, you know, an offer sheet situation? If you don't match, then you're getting futures back, so you're taking a good player out of the lineup. And I think regardless of what happens, the Jets roster is worse than last year's. I feel like everyone would agree with that, just the losses on the defense alone. And because of cap problems, the Jets were kind of hamstrung. They couldn't do much about it. So I think there's pressure now for results because especially Dustin Byfuglien and Blake Wheeler are not getting any younger, as people like to say in this office. That is a fact. And I know the bottom core, the bottom chunk of the core of the Jets roster is still young, but that top part of the core is a couple of older veteran leaders, and they don't have that many years left of being great players, Wheeler and Byfuglien. They're still in their sort of primes, but they're on their way out just based on the science of aging. So I think if the Jets, if they miss the playoffs, you never know in the Central these days, or if they bomb out early, I think you have to start wondering if they need a new shepherd to make roster decisions.
Fair enough.
Next question is from Jordan, we'll say Slatish. Could be Slatish, but I'm going to say Slatish.
Okay.
And Jordan asks, why is Jake Gardner still unsigned, and will he sign before the season begins? Well, one thing I heard, or at least I've read, it's been reported by a few different beat writers, no one's saying who, but in the social media world, there's been talk that Gardner has a handshake agreement with a certain team that's waiting to place certain guys on long-term injured reserve, and then they're going to sign him. So who knows if that's true, but it's something to watch for. But what do you guys think?
I think part of it is the fact that I think that more and more certainty is an asset in this league. You want certainty in your lineup, right? And this is a guy that is going to command some serious money, and he doesn't bring you that certainty, either in the form of his health or in the form of, you know, his play on the ice sometimes, right? Like, you're never certain which Jake Gardner is going to show up, right? And I think the back issues and the health are the ones that really, I think, would have scared off a lot of teams that might have otherwise been bullish on this guy.
Right, so he might need to do a one-year prove-it deal to show his back is healthy.
Yeah, because keep in mind, the last time we saw Jake Gardner was in the playoffs for Toronto, and he was a lot more guarded than he usually is because of the back ailment, and which is understandable. It was good he gritted through it, but he was not the, you know, wild stallion that he usually is, making those rushes up the ice with the puck. You know, he was not using his skating. He was just sort of dumping it out. And ironically, I said this, I think, last week, it was a much safer Jake Gardner. It was almost better for the playoffs in that way, but at the same time, it's like, if you're going to be paying him $6 million a year, that's not what you want. You don't want to stay at home, Jake Gardner. No, because nobody needs that.
Because then all you have to do is sign Dion Phaneuf.
Right.
If you want a guy that's just going to chip it off the glass, that's what Dion Phaneuf became in the last 4 or 5 years of his career. Yeah. He was a very highly paid guy who just chipped it off the glass.
Yeah, you can,
and didn't
you can
make
get
plays. And, and so, I mean, with Jake Gardner, I mean,
you want the high end.
That's, you know, you take the good with the bad with that, but you want the good and you need the good.
Yeah.
And if you're not going to get that, then he's a jag. He's just a guy, right?
He's just a guy. Yeah. And just a guy costs $1 million.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's weird. There are a couple of rumors that I don't really understand. One is the idea of Gardner coming back to play for the Leafs on a one-year minimum deal, or minimum salary deal, or, like, you know, let's say $1 million, whatever it's going to be. But I don't understand it just from a roster construction standpoint, because the Leafs on the left side, you've already got Riley, you've got Muzzin. Once Dermott is healthy, you have Dermott, and even Rasmus Sandin might be knocking on the door. So if you add Gardner, then you're five deep on the left side.
Right.
The only reason to do it would be if Dermott's recovery is going to be a lot longer than expected, and you're really certain you're not going to be breaking up Sandin. Fair enough, you sign him for 1 year. The other team that's been linked to him a lot, another one I don't understand, is Montreal. If Gardner has problems with the emotional pressure of playing in Toronto, Montreal is not going to solve that.
That's right, because it's worse there.
Yeah, I think it's even worse there. Higher pressure environment.
Absolutely, yeah. and it's in two languages. It's worse there.
Yeah, but he only reads one.
Yeah.
But I think the fan base has a reputation for being even less patient with players who are struggling. So I don't know. I don't see that being a fit for him on a personal level, but we'll see. Next question is from Jeff Putnam at Putsky88. Which rookie will surprise everyone this season, and which rookie will disappoint versus expectations? We'll start with prospect boy, Ryan Kennedy.
Okay, yes. So for the rookie that will surprise the season, I'm going with Denis Gurianov of the Dallas Stars. I had a chance to talk with AHL Texas coach Derek Laxdal this summer, and I was asking him, because it's been quite a while since Denis Gurianov was drafted in the first round by Dallas, but he was saying that, you know, a lot of maturity has happened in those years, and, you know, Gurianov, he's a big guy, he's got a lot of skill, and he's very coachable. So it's taken a while to get him to this point, but, you know, I see a fit on the wing, you know, maybe even in the top six, and that's obviously where Gurianov would be the best for Dallas. And if he can seize that opportunity, then all of a sudden, you've got a player that is a bit older than some of the other rookies and has, you know, a really nice physical package to him in a good situation. I mean, Dallas is a lot deeper now than they were last season, and if he can fit in on one of those lines, I think he could contribute quite nicely this year. Sticking with Russian rookies, one who might disappoint versus expectations, I would say is Ilya Samsonov. The goaltender for the Washington Capitals has first pro season in North America last year, and, you know, it ended pretty well. He had some ups and downs, but it ended pretty well. My only concern in terms of expectations is how much are you actually going to see Samsonov in the NHL this year. Obviously, you still have Braden Holtby there, and you don't want the kid riding the pine all the time. You'd probably rather see him in Hershey. So I think we'll see some of Samsonov this year, but not that much. And I don't think he's going to be an impact guy right away, because he's still figuring out the North American game. And, you know, the AHL starting to go well for him, but the NHL is another level of shooters. So I think we need to temper expectations right now about him. Right.
It's interesting, too, you mentioned Gurianov, because I was speaking to Jim Neal, Dallas Stars GM, maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago, and I think I was just saying, hey, good job on, you know, getting Pavelski, and then I was saying, you know, he was saying he's excited for next year, and I said, oh, how about Rupe Hintz? And then he sort of shifted gears and said, whoa, don't forget about Denis Gurianov.
There you go.
Just a sign that internally they're excited about him.
Yeah.
And I think they're...
They've been patient, too.
Yeah, exactly. they're convinced that he's not Valeri Nichushkin 2.0. And, right. And I agree, yeah. Kenny, what do you got?
Well, I was going to go with a safe pick, but I'm going to go off the board a little bit. As I am
calling an audible at the line of scrimmage.
And I am going to go with...
Uh-oh.
Alex Barré-Boulet.
Oh,
in Tampa. Wow. Thank you.
Is he your, he's your new Yanni Gourde.
He's my new Yanni Gourde. Yeah. He's going to be my new man crush.
There you go.
Yeah. I mean, rookie of the year in the American League last year. And Tampa has always, you know, from Tyler Johnson to Andre Palat to Yanni Gourde, they've always had a reputation or at least have been known for being able, you know, being willing to give guys like this a chance. And I mean, right now their lineup is really stacked, but who knows, maybe an injury early in the year, he comes in, he plays himself, you know, onto the team and plays himself into a top, you know, top nine role. So there's a guy that, you know, another undersized free agent guy who's going to come in and do great things on a great team, in my opinion.
That's fun.
Possibly. So there's my guy.
And what's interesting too is Tampa, the farm system, also has the leading scorer in the AHL.
Carter.
I'm glad you said his name. I was like, I've never said
Carter
his name aloud. Verhaeghe. So there's another guy that could be a hidden gem.
Exactly. And I'm not going to call this guy a disappointment, but I'm looking at a guy like Cody Glass with the Vegas Golden Knights. And everything about Vegas is about merit. Everything about Vegas is about being ready. Everything about Vegas is being able to contribute. And they are, you know, they're a pretty stacked, deep lineup. And I think, you know, I don't think it would be the worst thing in the world for Cody Glass to, you know, play a year in the American League and, you know, sort of get grounded in reality in that respect and then make his way up the chain. Mm. You know, I think a lot of people are expecting him to step in this year and be an impact player. I'm not so sure. And that's not, that is in no way an indictment of Cody Glass, because I think, you know, last year he proved how elite he can be. But I think it's still, you know, I think the teams like the Detroits who let their prospects get overseasoned, you know, ultimately you end up having a lot more success that way. Mm-hmm. And I think that could be the case with Cody Glass.
You want a good marinade.
Right. That's right. Yes. Exactly.
Yes.
Good picks. For my rookie that I'm liking, the sleeper rookie, I'm going to say Drake Batherson in Ottawa. I think last year, you know, he got 20 games in, at 9 points in 20 games, showed some brief, pretty good chemistry with Matt Duchene. They sent him down, but I remember being in Ottawa briefly for an assignment at the time, and Guy Boucher was saying it wasn't a merit decision. It was just to give Batherson more playing time. That was why they sent him back down. And he lit up the AHL. He was better than a point per game. It seemed easy for him. Mm. Like, he is the definition of nothing left to prove at that level.
Right.
And I think on Ottawa's depth chart, there's just an easy path to climb. There's not a lot of competition, especially if they put him at right wing.
Yeah.
You know, you're going to be passing guys like Bobby Ryan. I mean, and Ottawa has a lot of forwards that can play either wing. So I think you can find a way to push Batherson up the depth chart. And I think if it doesn't happen right away, by season's end, he's going to be the first line right winger. Mm-hmm. And I think he's going to have a breakout season. Really nice scoring touch. And the rookie that I'm kind of – it's funny – he's not even necessarily going to make the team. That's kind of the point I'm making, is people seem to be anointing Adam Fox in New York as, oh, the power play quarterback is going to be a breakout. And I think he does have a lot of potential. But it's not like he's Cale Makar. It's not like Adam Fox was chosen in the top four of the NHL draft and has this absolutely elite pedigree. Good college career, of course. Mm-hmm. Was a good prospect coming up with Calgary. But I still think when you have not really been exposed to the physicality of the pro game, I don't think it's a given that he's just going to jump right into the lineup. I think he could use some more seasoning, especially as a defenseman. So I'm not just going to pencil him in as a top four power play quarterback on the Rangers. So I don't know. I think people have to temper their expectations and understand that if Adam Fox gets 25 points this year, that's a good rookie season. It's not like he's going to be a 45-point guy, in my opinion, as a rookie. The next question is from Billy Puck follower. And Billy Puck says, who would win a round-robin style tournament between the Senators, Kings, Ducks, Sabres, Blue Jackets, and Oilers? And I do think the joke here is supposed to be that these teams are all bad.
Right.
And I think that's what Billy Puck is saying. And I agree with you, Billy Puck.
Billy Puck follower.
Yeah, Billy Puck follower.
Shouldn't follow the puck. Shouldn't follow the puck. Go where it's going to be. Don't follow it.
Good as Don Cherry says, tell you right now, don't follow the puck. Okay. So let's make our picks for this basement dweller tournament. Who you got, fellas?
I like it. I'm going to go with the Edmonton Oilers because they have the best player in Connor McDavid. The best two players, really. Yeah, they got Leon Draisaitl as well. Yeah. And yeah, I guess out of that pool of teams, those are the two best players. I can see Edmonton getting hot in a tournament like this. They're the type of team. Well, no, but they're the type of team that you can ride
less cold. Getting less cold.
You know, I mean, you look at the defenses they're going to be facing here. And, I mean, Columbus will have a good defense. But otherwise, I think most of these teams are pretty porous. So I think just riding McDavid and Draisaitl would be enough to win the basement tournament.
Yeah, I'm still going to go with the Blue Jackets. I don't buy into the doom and gloom that a lot of other people have. I think they're still going to be good. I don't think they're going to be great, but I think they're going to be good. Yeah. You know, they've got a good basis there. They've got
Seth Jones.
They've got an elite defense corps.
Yeah.
An NHL elite defense corps, and I think that is good enough to make you at least a decent team. And to me, I look at all these teams and I don't see any decent teams other than the Blue Jackets. Mm. Maybe Anaheim. You know, this time last year, I would have said no. Like, they're probably not even going to be able to you know, put a roster together.
Right.
But I think now you've got a bunch of young guys, and those guys will all be hungry. You know, you've got Max Jones, Max Comtois, you've got Troy Terry, you've got Sam Steele. Yeah. You know, so those guys are going to be, you know, especially in a short five-game thing, they would they'd have a lot of energy, and they might really bring it. So I would say Columbus or Anaheim.
I think Columbus was probably my top pick just because they can play discipline style to physical style under John Tortorella. Assuming their goaltending holds up with Korpisalo and Merzlikins, I think that Columbus is going to be fine defensively this year. So they can win a lot of 2-1 games in this War of Attrition tournament. But my other sleeper team...
And it's easy to win 2-1 games in this tournament.
Of course.
Right. Nobody's getting Barnburners.
It might be Barnburners. But my sleeper team is a team whose new coach is a master of the short tournament. Kruger, the Buffalo Sabres.
Uh-huh.
So you just ride Rasmus Dahlin and play him for 30 minutes every game in the little round robin tourney.
Yeah.
And maybe you double shift Jack Eichel. I don't know. I think talent wise, at least Buffalo maybe can compete with Edmonton the best in terms of top end talent on the roster. You know, Jeff Skinner and Eichel, guys like that. So I'll say Sabres are the sleeper. Maybe the final is Columbus Buffalo.
Ooh.
Wow.
Wow.
Get your tickets.
I think I
now.
Just yawned. I think I yawned saying that. So the next question is from what might be a robot, Benmo 2.0.
Asks, give it the Turing test.
Yeah, Benmo 9000 asks, who retires first, Alex Ovechkin or Sidney Crosby? I feel confident about my answer for this one.
I thought I was confident, and then I was like, ugh, I don't know.
It's a good question. It's the best question of the lot.
Great job, question robot.
Yeah, yes. Way to go. No, this is an amazing question. Because they're both going to play until it gets ugly.
Right.
They're both going to play until it gets ugly.
Until they lock the rink behind them.
Yeah, and so I mean, Sid's under contract longer, but I don't think that's going to be that big a deal. I'm going to go with Ovechkin only because, for a couple of reasons, the numbers tell us he's been more durable. He's played almost 100 more career games than Crosby has to this point, and they both started in the same year. So there's that, and I just don't think... I think it's going to be easier for Alex Ovechkin to hide and to just be a power play specialist and to, get that bomb on the power play and not... like. And, but he's obviously a very physical player. And and as of them winning the Cup, he's a much more engaged player.
Yeah.
So that's going to wear him down. But I think he's gonna be able to afford and going to be more inclined to pick his spots as his career goes on. And so he'll kind of be able to hide a little bit. Crosby, he just won't. He'll play hard every shift until the last one of his career. And that combined with, I think, a little less durability, I think might mean that he'll have the shorter leash, the shorter tenure.
So wait, are you saying Crosby?
I'm saying, who retires first?
Or
retires? I'm saying Crosby will retire first.
Gotcha. I'm going with Ovechkin, and it only comes down to one factor, because I was trying to think like, oh, well, Ovechkin's got his cup and he likes to party and everything, but it's like, but he also really likes to play hockey.
Yeah.
Just like I said, I don't think you can make a distinction in terms of their competitiveness or their want to be there. Both the guys, they just want to play, they want to win, they love the game. So I'm going to go with the fact that Ovi has a bigger frame. He carries more weight, and that has been a benefit for him up to now, and will probably still be a benefit to him for the next couple of years. But eventually, I think that's going
to
wear on him.
Hard to carry that around the
ice. It's going to be hard to carry that when he gets into his late 30s. So because of that, I think eventually he'll have to stop. I don't know if it's going to be injuries or if it's just like he's going to slow down. Right now it's great for him, but I think eventually it's going to catch up. And because of that, I'm going to say Ovi, but great question.
Interesting. And what I like about it is that we all have very different reasons for our answers. So I'm going to say that Crosby retires first. And for me, it's a matter of motivation. So Ovechkin, if he keeps playing for another 5 years, is going to have a chance to challenge Wayne Gretzky's record all time for goals. And I remember asking Ovechkin before they won the cup if that mattered to him. And he said, I want my cup first before I think about that. They have the cup now. He has his cup now. So I think he knows now if he continues to score, even if he's not scoring 50 goals, if he's scoring 40 goals, then a couple 30-goal seasons, if he can manage to hang in there, getting close to his 40s, he's going to at least become the second 800-goal guy. Third 800-goal guy, Gordie Howe, of course. And I think he's going to have a real shot. Whereas Crosby, if you look at Crosby's numbers, he's going to retire as maybe a top five player of all time. But he's not going to challenge a goals record, an assists record, a points record. He's got multiple Stanley Cups. And I even asked him this summer, said, you know, you've won everything there is to win. What about the Selkies? Out on your
That's
bucket list.
That's what he wants.
But what he said to me was, he said, yeah, but Patrice Bergeron's going to be on the ballot every year. There's only two spots up for grabs, and he wasn't a finalist that year.
Right.
So he says in his mind, because of Bergeron's presence, that he feels like there literally are just two places available every year. So he's not overly optimistic that he can even win that. And I think that Crosby, because he's had the more sort of dangerous injury past, as he gets older, something happens to him again, I think he's more likely to say, you know what, I need to walk away to be safe.
Yeah.
Whereas Ovi's been much more durable, like you said, Ken, and Ovi has that big carrot to chase, which is the goals record. So, nice. Great question, Robot.
Very good question.
Good job, Robot. Good Robot. next question is from Lee Hamilton, and Lee says, in the league where revenue and TV ratings are so dependent on large market success, why aren't ideas like a soft salary cap or luxury tax discussed more often? In that scenario, the large market teams could spend more. To me, it's a Gary Bettman thing, and I mean, Gary Bettman is the parity guy. He wants those, even though they're smaller markets, I think his goal, his entire tenure has been to develop those markets, and I think he prefers having as many teams as possible competitive, even if it means, you know, you're not getting the TV ratings of dominant Kings Rangers matchups every year.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think because of Bettman, it's going to stay the way it is.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if it's because of Bettman, but but I mean, you look at baseball, and you know, it's a race to the bottom in a lot of cases, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's basically because the NHL has never had an appetite for a luxury tax. It never wanted one. It fought so hard to get the system that it's got right now, and it's working for them. And I just don't get any sense whatsoever that there's going to be any kind of luxury tax in the place of a hard cap. The hard cap is king. Yeah. It has kept the top salaries down. If you look at other sports, you know, hockey's top guys are not making much more than they were making even 15 years ago.
Yeah.
Whereas in all the other three sports, the guys are making 2, 3, 4 times what they made 10 years ago, 15 years ago. In hockey, it's relatively the same. Yeah. Like Peter Forsberg was making, what, $11 million?
And guys
like that. And, you know, Connor McDavid's now making 12 and a half, and John Tavares is making 11. And
adjusted for inflation, today's players are less rich.
Yeah. In fact, I would think, and I don't know this for a fact, but I think that what's going to happen here, I feel more confident that this CBA is going to get extended and this is going to be taken care of than I have at any time in this process. And I think part of it is, in fact, I think there may be a chance that the cap gets frozen rather than moves up, because I think that's one way. That's going to be the one way to mitigate, or one of the ways to mitigate escrow.
True.
And that's all it's about for the players.
Right.
That's all the players care about.
That drives them nuts.
They want to come out of these next negotiations without having to put, you know, to give up 14% of their pay, or 12 to 14% of their pay, you know, a couple of percent of which they get back at the end of the year. But it's all about escrow. And I think, I don't think it's going to get... In fact, I don't think there's going to be more money in the system. I think there might even be less.
Mm. And, you know, you look at even big market teams like the Boston Bruins, for example, and the system works for them. And we know Jeremy Jacobs is one of the most powerful owners in the league. He's one of the most powerful people in hockey. His team just went to the final. He doesn't have to spend more. He can spend to the cap, and his team can still be competitive because he's got a GM that's doing the right things in Don Sweeney. You look at the Toronto Maple Leafs, and... You know, they can spend off the ice with coaches, trainers, scouts. You know, Chicago has a big scouting department as well. They've made a lot of moves. Chicago has won 3 cups in the salary cap era.
Yeah.
So they've made it work as a big market. Los Angeles is a big market. They've won 2 Stanley Cups. You know, they figured out how to put that team together.
Yeah.
And so, you know, for those owners, it's like, oh, I can make a ton of profit and still be very competitive.
Yeah.
I say, okay.
Yeah, because they don't care. Like, they don't care. I mean, it's the general managers and the guys that put the teams together that care.
Yeah.
But the owners did not give up a season and a half in lockouts in order to give it back.
Right.
They got what they did that because they wanted this system, yeah. And they got this.
The league's
system.
Never been healthier financially.
Yeah, and so they're not going to give that back.
No.
True. Next question is from Matt Boehringer, and Matt says, last year it was Erik Karlsson and Mark Stone. Who are the biggest names that will be moved going forward to the trade deadline, and where could they go? So maybe I'll start here because I wrote about this recently, made a big old list. Chris Kreider's a name to watch, but I think Chris Kreider is more likely to be moved before the season starts because the Rangers have $1 million in cap space. They have no obvious candidate for LTIR. They have to re-sign still Brendan Lemieux and Tony DeAngelo. So like, there's been talk of, can Kreider, like, they're going to have to trade him no matter what before the season starts because they don't have the money to field their entire roster right now. So he's a name to watch, but I don't count him because I think he could be gone before the trade deadline. If we're talking trade deadline, it's going to be very interesting to watch what Bill Guerin does because Jared Spurgeon, I know it was reported before, I think it was Mike Russo that reported of The Athletic, that he expressed interest in an extension if he respected the team's vision. And so maybe he's going to sit down with Bill Guerin and get a better sense that, you know, Bill Guerin wants to build the team a certain way and that it'll appeal to Spurgeon, and Spurgeon wants to sign. But the other factor at play is maybe Bill Guerin looks at this roster and says, no, it's not about making the team competitive right now. We have to go backward to go forward. Mm-hmm. And that might mean trading Jared Spurgeon because as a right shot, puck mover, very underrated defensively, he could command a king's ransom at the trade deadline. Yep. Any team could use Jared Spurgeon. Very underrated player. Mm-hmm. And he's going to bring in a first-round pick and a good prospect. We know the Wild, that they really need help to spruce up their farm system again. So I think he's a guy that if I have to bet right now, is he going to be part of the Wild or get traded? I don't know. I think Bill Guerin coming in, like, if you're going to come in and do the same old thing, then why did they fire Paul Fenton?
Right.
I think
it makes sense for
Lizard
the Wild.
Comments?
Yeah. That's right. But if you're coming in, I think you got to be blowing it up and doing something drastic because the organization is saying, what we've done is not working. We can't be in this market.
Need a reset.
Yeah. So it starts with trading your best expiring asset, Jared Spurgeon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You could go with somebody who's going to be an RFA or UFA this summer, like a Robin Lehner maybe in Chicago if things go south there. But I wanted to look 2 years ahead to guys because then you can trade them and they still have a year left on that contract. Generally, a lot of those guys don't end up getting traded at the trade deadline.
Sometimes.
But, you know, I look at a guy like Dougie Hamilton. I mean, because Dougie Hamilton, it doesn't need to be, nothing else needs to be said, right? Because that's what he does. He gets traded. So
he goes to some museum.
There's a guy, okay. There's a guy, and another guy, you know, and I'm not for 1 second saying he's going to get traded, but you may look at a guy like Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, who will have a year left after this year, because then if you do decide to pull the trigger on that trade, and you do decide that you need the help on defense, you need the help in goal or whatever, and he's an asset that you have too much of already, you know, you can get more for him with a year left on his contract than you can if his contract's expiring.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go with a big, spicy name here. Taylor Hall in New Jersey.
Yeah, that's a good one.
You know, pending UFA in the summer. We think the Devils are going to be really fun this year, you know, with Jack Hughes and PK Subban and Wayne Simmonds coming in and Nikita Gusev as well. But what if they struggle, you know? And you have to look at asset management. If Taylor Hall was going to go to market in the summer and you're GM Ray Shiro, do you say to yourself, okay, well, what can I get for Taylor Hall at the deadline? Because he would be one of the most potent assets available by far. You could get a mint for Taylor Hall
now. He's got to stay healthy.
He's got to stay healthy.
And I think you got to trade him way before the deadline.
Yeah, I can see that.
But we're saying by the deadline. But this isn't a trade you're going to make on February 17th.
Yeah.
This is a trade you're going to make on November 12th.
If you're struggling.
If you're out of it.
You're toast. And a couple of teams that I was thinking of were like Nashville or Colorado. Teams that are looking pretty good right now. Mm-hmm. And obviously Nashville and New Jersey are familiar trade partners. Mm-hmm. Teams that are pretty good right now, we think they're going to be contenders, but they could definitely use an elite winger. I mean, who couldn't? Right. Those teams in particular. Mm-hmm. And then you're trading outside of your conference. If you don't care about that thing, I think Boston would be an example as well, where if you had Taylor Hall on your second line, oh my. Yeah. Like that would give teams fits. So, you know, I mean, if things go well in New Jersey, then obviously you hang on to Taylor Hall. Even if you're in the mix, I think you hang on to him. But if things go pear-shaped right away, then I think you have to at least look at it before you potentially lose him for nothing in the summer.
Yeah, because John Tavares a couple of years ago is the cautionary tale. We don't want to be that team that's, you know, we're committed to keeping him, and then he decides to leave in the summer, you get nothing for him.
And players have paid attention to that. They have definitely studied what Tavares has done and said, there's no reason not to do your research and be patient and go to free agency. You can always re-sign with your team like Steven Stamkos did in Tampa Bay, or you can go elsewhere.
What's going to be interesting is Austin Matthews just signed a 5-year deal, right? So I kind of started thinking about this. He could very well pull a Tavares. Oh, yeah. Tavares. Sure. He leaves after the 5 years to go home, to go play in Arizona. And then Leaf fans will know exactly.
If that happens, you cannot burn Matthews jerseys you were happy when Tavares came back. So you can't do what the Islanders fans did, because then you're hypocrites, okay? Leaf Nation. It's funny because that's like a phantom 5 years from now scenario. So the last question is from Neil McDonald, and Neil asks, will there be an RFA to sit out the entire season? And then there's a second part of the question, and become a UFA July 1st, which we believe is not accurate.
It's not.
Yes,
it's not.
You were doing some homework on it, Kenny, it's so maybe you answered first.
RFAs, they're not, the guys coming off of entry level, they don't become free agents just because they sat out a year. In fact, they would, I'm not sure if they would still owe that year. I mean, they don't owe the year on the contract.
If you're arbitration eligible.
Because they don't have a contract, but they may still owe that year in terms of their, whether or not they can go to arbitration and that sort of thing.
You can sign a one-year deal, like Mark Stone is the closest. Yeah. One-year deal in arbitration that takes you to UFA.
Right, exactly. That, I don't think that's going to happen. I think it looks dire right now because none of them have signed.
Right.
And they all seem to be waiting for the shoe to drop. But, I talked to Doug Armstrong about this a couple of years ago in Traverse City, where you're going.
Going next
For the rookie tournament, and I think it was Jaden Schwartz and somebody else who were coming off entry level, and he said he was like, I'm really not that worried about it, because in the end, what's a player going to do? Is he not going to play and not get paid at all? It doesn't happen during
the prime years of their career.
Like how often does that happen? That a guy sits out a year. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I think Brandon Witt did it, and you know, a few other guys have done it, and they've gone to play elsewhere, but.
Peter Nevitt, again, that's like
generally
decades
speaking,
ago.
They want to be playing in the NHL. Yeah. They know that if they sit out an entire year, it's going to be really like almost impossible to get that money back. So I think they will all get signed at some point. I don't assume it's going to be any time in the very near future. But I think they'll all sign. These guys can't become unrestricted free agents. Mm-hmm. So it's not a worry.
And I agree. I don't think it's going to happen because they have their cautionary tale in William Nylander. Like, I'm sure if any of those guys were like, hey, was it worth it, you know, staying out until December 1st or like just before December 1st? Nylander would be like, no.
I had seven goals.
Yeah, it didn't go well at all.
No, it doesn't. Generally, it doesn't.
It's a hard lead.
It doesn't.
You just can't take that time off.
But at that age and at that point in your development, it's imperative for you to be in camp on day one. And none of these guys are going to be in camp on day one, okay?
Yeah,
like, they're not going to take out insurance and come as free agents in camp. That's not going to happen. So a lot of them are going to miss camp. Some of them will miss part of the season. And those that do... I'm not making any judgment here whatsoever. Sign for what you think you're worth,
totally.
And you sit out until you get that. But it's going to hurt them.
Yeah,
it's going to hurt them. It's going to take them a while to get themselves up to speed at the NHL level. It happens all the time, and it will happen with these guys, as good as they are.
Mm-hmm. I think if I had to pick someone just for the sake of the exercise, I've said it all along. Laine is the guy I've been the most worried about.
Yeah.
So you never know. Does he go back to Finland? I don't think so, though. I really don't. So that's it for this week, everybody. Next up, next time you hear us, we'll be previewing the divisions one by one. We're going to do a podcast for each division. Hockey is almost here. It's exciting. Thanks for listening.